Welcome back to Kansas Farm Bureau's Inside Ag Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Deering. Today, I was joined by KFB's Ryan Flickner to talk about high turnout in the 2020 election, the U.S. Senate race, and what's at stake for Kansas farmers and ranchers. Welcome to Inside Ag. Today, I'm talking all things election with Ryan Flickner, Kansas Farm Bureau's Senior Director of Advocacy. Ryan, thank you for joining me and welcome to the show.
Morning, Greg. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm excited that we had a little rain this morning. Other than that, I'm ready to get into it if you are.
Well, I don't know how deep we're going to get into it. Seems like things are changing by the minute and certainly by the hour. But I think I wasn't a mathematician, but my math has, we're about 12 days out. A lot to learn here in the next 12 days, I think.
That is true. We are just a few days away from Election Day. What are you hearing and seeing across the state as these races make it into the final stretch?
You know, it's exactly that, Greg. It is the final stretch. So all of the legwork and the ground game that got laid, if you were unopposed or even had to, you know, survive the primary, you had to pivot pretty quickly here for the general. But now the ball is in the air. So we've got to figure out which direction it's going and if we're able to run some plays and make up ground and so on and so forth. So I think the biggest thing that has been eye-opening for me, we knew it because of COVID and just probably the most politically correct term to use across the country right now. We knew this was likely going to be a watershed election. It was likely going to be the election, at least in history, that we've had the most absentee or mail-in or advanced voting that's ever transpired. I think that will hold true. Certainly the numbers, you know, the Secretary of State here in Kansas, they do update numbers every day. And as of yesterday, so that would have been the 20th, there had been over 482,000 ballots that had already actually been mailed. And out of those 482 plus thousand ballots, roughly 46,000 have been returned. Then we get into, you know, who's actually voted in person. And you know, that's actually ahead of where it was even 2 or 4 years ago. So with all the data that's coming in, roughly 10% of the ballots that have been mailed have already been returned. I think that's certainly unprecedented as we look at the history of elections in Kansas, and that probably holds true for many other states who some of them actually had advanced balloting opening up before Kansas did last week, and a few others have just recently here in this week, as a matter of fact, have just started opening up.
I've seen odds that the Democratic candidate here for U.S. Senate has a 1 in 4, possibly even a 1 in 3 chance of winning. That seems pretty high considering Kansas last elected a Democrat to U.S. Senate in the 1930s. Could that streak really end this year?
Yes, it could. I don't know if it ultimately will. If you look at especially the United States Senate race, as you talked about, Kansans have not elected a Democrat to the United States Senate since 1932. That's the longest single party run of any state in the nation. So a lot of history, you know, going down here. But on the flip side, Dr. Barbara Beaulieu, she's the Democrat nominee. She's raised $13+ million this, you know, cycle alone, and basically only being a candidate for a little over a year now. Dr. Marshall, you know, he's been in the United States House of Representatives, so he's at least has a history of, you know, farm policy and regulatory policy at the federal level. His fundraising hasn't been anywhere near what Beaulieu's has been, but I would argue that a lot more of his fundraising has come from Kansans than hers has. It's that very typical what we've seen with Democrats across the nation. Lindsey Graham in South Carolina, Susan Collins up in Maine, both of those are Republicans. They are running against, they're basically in the race of their life. And the Democrat challenger has raised just ungodly amount of money. So whether that's coming from California, whether it's, you know, from elsewhere, coastal elites is probably a term you get to hear a lot on the radio and the TV ads. But far and away, not only in the Kansas Senate or the race for Senate here in Kansas, but also the four congressional races, the Democrats have been raising just gobs and gobs of money from outside the state. So I think money is hard to overcome. Certainly, you know, when there is not an incumbent up for you know, a referendum per se. So the fact that Pat Roberts announced a couple of years ago now that he would not seek re-election, that's an open seat. So you don't have the Bob Doles, the Nancy Kassebaums, the Sam Brownbacks, the Pat Roberts, the Jerry Morans that have, you know, a known track record, at least in the United States Senate, on the ballot. So it really is a free for all. And I think, again, a watershed election, and what we even saw back in 2018 on the gubernatorial side, you could win a statewide race in Kansas by basically winning the most populated five or six counties. So it will be imperative if our endorsed candidate, Dr. Roger Marshall, that came from the grassroots, the county farm bureau structure and process. So if our endorsed candidate is going to prevail in this United States Senate race, we have got to make sure that farm and ranch families all across the state actually show up and vote. Because if you counter that with what we're hearing coming out of Johnson County, with 90% of eligible voters likely voting, or at least that's what the election clerk has said there in Johnson County, what she predicts the turnout will be. I would argue it's going to be very similar in Wyandotte, Shawnee, and Douglas, and Sedgwick. So, you know, you could pad up a score pretty heavily in those urban counties, but you got to make sure in the frontier and the rural counties all across the state, the folks that are registered to vote actually show up, and, you know, certainly a 75 to 80, 85, 90% clip just to offset some of the urban turnout.
Absolutely. And I mean, as you mentioned earlier, nearly 500,000 people have requested mail-in ballots. I know in-person early voting is ongoing. I went yesterday and there was actually a little bit of a line, which I've never encountered before. Do you have any sense of what effect this high turnout might have on the Senate race and even some of the down ballot contests?
You know, I think this is where a lot of political analysts are going to Monday morning or probably Wednesday morning quarterback it come November 4th, because we just don't quite frankly know. When you have 90% turnout rates, when you have, you know, just the advanced ballot, I mean, clearly, I think POTUS on down, you're either voting for Trump or you're voting for Biden. I don't think whatever amount of money gets thrown on the airwaves and radio and TV and however full our mailboxes are every day we go home, I don't know if there's a true undecided voter out there right now. So I think as you carry that down, exactly what you said, with those roughly 500,000 advanced ballot requests, what you said, you went to vote in person and actually had to wait in a line. We've heard it in Georgia. We've heard it from Illinois and Indiana and even down in Sedgwick County when they opened up their advanced voting in-person locations. There was just, you know, turnout out the wazoo. So it wasn't unheard of in many states to hear, oh, I waited in line an hour, hour and a half, so on and so forth to vote. So, you know, I think what we'll have to see, and I know there's a lot of the publicly available information out there, there's a lot of data mining that's going into that. That's all legal. I mean, you know, you can get online and figure out which party an individual's registered for. You can actually look at their voting history. So I think one of the telling aspects of this cycle, at least, is a lot of voters are only presidential voters. You know, I mean, they show up to the polls when the president's on the ballot every 4 years. There's fewer voters that show up, you know, when the governor's on the ballot or when there's a United States Senate seat that's open for election and so on and so forth. And then as you take that down to every 2 years, certainly the midterms, the between presidential elections, you know, even the Kansas legislature level, the Kansas House being in cycle every 2 years, the Kansas Senate being in cycle every four. You know, those midterm and those off-cycle elections, there's not nearly the voter turnout that there is for a presidential. So the fact that we are having this kind of watershed movement and so many folks are eager and excited and enthusiastic to go cast their ballot, there's going to be a lot of analysis and a lot of learning, I think, coming out of it. Are those voters going to show up the next 2 years, the next presidential cycle, or just with the social unrest and the civic discourse that we're hearing and seeing firsthand in our country, is that the issue that's driving folks to the polls? Is it the COVID and the response to the pandemic is what's driving folks to the polls? At this point, I don't think we know. I would argue it's a combination of all of the above, which, you know, I think that's good. I mean, it's our constitutional right to go out and vote. So certainly, whether it's a mail-in ballot, if it's advanced voting in person, or if you actually want to show up on November 3rd, however you vote, that's certainly a good thing. So I just, you know, again, I hope our members, Kansas Farm Bureau members across the state, and I certainly hope the rural portions of the state realize truly what is on the line when it comes to the United States Senate and their congressional representation over in the Kansas, or excuse me, in the U.S. House of Representatives, that they actually show up and vote. Because this is not something that, oh, you know, we've always elected a Republican, so we're going to, you know, elect another one. Or we've always had great ag representation going back to the Dole and the Roberts, obviously, being chairman of the House and Senate Ag Committee and Senator Moran, so on and so forth. There is a lot at stake when it comes to agriculture, farm policy, regulatory issues in this election. So we've absolutely got to make sure that we're calling friends, families, neighbors to make sure that they are showing up either on November 3rd or taking care of it in advance, either by mail or in person.
Besides showing up to vote, is there anything else our listeners can do to ensure a favorable outcome with all that's at stake for agriculture this year?
Yeah, you know, we've bantered back and forth on this, and we've had some other, you know, conversations here at the professional staff level within Kansas Farm Bureau. President Feltz, he actually sent a letter out to all county presidents as well as all voting members of the organization, just reaffirming how important this election is. So I think, you know, just keeping that up, I'm a personal belief that, you know, social media is an echo chamber. You have your friends and you have your likes and your sources that you always go to. So you're probably just, you know, preaching to the same bubble that you always have on there. But certainly if it's a calling tree, or if it's calling the cousins over in Kansas City, or if you've got some absentee landowners in, you know, Topeka or Wichita or Manhattan, wherever it may be, to make sure that they understand what's at stake. Because, you know, this isn't just federal issues. This also is state level issues. So when we start talking about the state budget, and state budget always has to balance. We don't have a printing press at the state of Kansas. So when it talks about revenues and expenditures, and there's always ongoing conversation about use value and the appropriate tax mix and how much agricultural land should be paying into the coffers, et cetera. So it's not just, you know, I live out here on the farm and ranch, and, you know, my wife and I, we're going to go vote, but we're renting, you know, a couple thousand acres, or we've got off-farm kin that, you know, are at school at K-State or KU, Wichita State, Fort Hays, wherever it may be. Or if it is, you know, just calling the mechanic at the Case IH or the John Deere dealership, or if it's, you know, just somebody else that's in your kind of network. Now that, you know, we're not necessarily all going to church on every Sunday, now that we don't necessarily get to go to the coffee clatch every morning. I know some of that's still happening, certainly more so in rural communities, but certainly when you get to urban and suburban areas, it's very, very different. So I think anything and everything we can do to spread the message and encourage folks with that personal touch, you know, reach out to them and tell them exactly what's on the line when it comes to the state legislature. Tell them exactly what's on the line when it comes to our federal races, whether it's one of the four U.S. House districts or if it's the United States Senate. That's very, very important as you start looking at maybe a single political party can control the White House, the United States Senate, and the House of Representatives in 2021. And there's a bunch of very major issues that are going to face agriculture in the next 4 to 6 years. And top of mind comes the Farm Bill reauthorization. That's due up in 2023. Farm economics are very, very different now than when the 2018 Farm Bill got passed. I would also argue that in 2022 is when the EPA gets full jurisdiction and full direction, if you will, when it comes to the renewable fuel standard. Another major, major piece that impacts estate planning and the death tax and capital gains and stepped up basis is the expiration of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. That got passed back in 2017 and really got implemented in 2018. That is going to expire in 2025. So as we start looking at the calendar year of 2020 coming to an end, and I know for many of us that can't happen soon enough, but we've got some policy issues to really wrestle with as we start getting into 21 through 2025. So really, really do encourage folks to get out and vote and make sure that you make the personal contact and touch with whoever's in your network to encourage them to do the same.
I think that's all the time that we have for today. Ryan, thank you for joining me for this edition of Inside Ag. Any final thoughts before we go?
Great to be with you, Greg, and just everybody out there, stay safe, and we'll get through this. But it's really important what happens on November 3rd, but it's just as important for the country what happens November 4th through January 20th. So stay tuned, and look forward to seeing many of you virtually at our annual meeting.
That's it for this edition of Inside Ag. Thank you for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or your preferred provider. From Manhattan, I'm Greg Deering for Kansas Farm Bureau, the voice of agriculture. Inside Ag is made possible by Kansas Farm Bureau members in each of the state's 105 counties. To become a member, visit www.kfb.org/join.